Here's your money briefing for Monday, December 19th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. For years, owning property and renting it out was a path to wealth, or at least a way to make some money on the side. But if you're interested in becoming a landlord today, the changing housing market in an unsteady economy is going to mean some extra number crunching.
People tend to overestimate the upside of owning a rental, such as the potential income and tax breaks and just the bragging rights, so to speak. But they underestimate the headaches and the expenses and the calls in the middle of the night.
So what steps should a potential new landlord take to get ahead of those headaches? Our personal finance reporter, Veronica Dagger, will be here to talk about it after the break. The rising cost of rent might make you think that being a landlord is an easy way to generate some passive income. Just sit back and watch the rent checks come in, right? Well, like any investment, it requires a lot of planning and being able to handle large expenses, both expected and unexpected. WSJ personal finance reporter Veronica Dagger has been speaking with financial experts about the pros and cons of becoming a landlord, and she's here with me now. Veronica, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, JR.
So, Veronica, there have been some big changes in the housing market lately. How have the risks and rewards of becoming a landlord changed?
Well, some people think, you know, just becoming a landlord is like a money-making monopoly game. You know, if you look on TikTok, you'll see, oh, there's so much opportunity for passive income. It's all upside. Well, the reality is people thinking about becoming landlords have a lot more risk and a lot more cost to consider these days. It's harder to turn a profit after a year of higher home prices and mortgage rates. Rents are up. And of course, you know, if you're a renter, you know that very well yourself. But due to inflation, so are the costs of repairs and routine home maintenance for a property you may own.
Yeah, let's talk more about the costs associated with becoming a landlord. I guess the first cost is just buying the property itself.
Yes, investor loans are more expensive than your typical 30-year mortgage that you would get on your primary home, for example. So investor loans, you're looking at interest rates in the 10 to 12% range, depending on the type of the loan, the term of it, and that's up from about 7 to 9% earlier this year. When you apply for a mortgage on an investment property, buyers need to put a larger down payment than they would for a primary or vacation home, and they are probably going to face stricter lending standards.
Ah, well, how strict are those requirements?
Well, it includes higher minimum credit scores, so you're looking at least a 700 credit score, a more desirable debt-to-income ratio, and then typically you need to have much higher cash reserves on hand than you would if you wanted to buy just a primary home, a primary mortgage. If you're putting more down and your rate is driving up your monthly mortgage payments, then you're under a lot more pressure to keep that property fully occupied. And some people say, oh, you know, that's not a problem these days. You know, there's so much demand for renters. Yes, but because of these mortgage rates, you may not be able to recoup your costs because you can't necessarily raise your rent to infinity. You have to be able to keep up with the market rates in your neighborhood. So you can't just charge whatever you want to make a profit. You need to keep up with what's happening in the market so you keep your property occupied.
So you buy the property, but now as the landlord, you're responsible for the maintenance, right?
That's right. So you need to factor in rising repair and maintenance costs. Inflation, supply chain disruptions have all raised the price of raw materials and appliances. Labor shortages have led to higher wages. Good luck trying to find a repair person these days. It's very tricky. Find quality help. And a recent survey by online property management platform Avail found that about 80% of landlords reported increased ownership costs over the past 12 months, with about 41% saying costs rose more than 10%. So you're facing higher costs and a much longer timeline to get your repairs done.
So there can be a lot of expenses involved here. So how do financial experts you spoke with say people who want to be a landlord should plan up front for those costs?
Well, you know, take off your rose-colored glasses, so to speak. People tend to overestimate the upside of owning a rental, such as the potential income and tax breaks and just the bragging rights, so to speak. But they underestimate the headaches and the expenses and the calls in the middle of the night. That's what Scott Trench told me. He is the chief executive of real estate investing site Bigger Pockets. Also, Larry Pershing, he is a financial advisor. He tells clients to buy a property only if it will produce at least 4% of the purchase price in profits per year. For example, if you purchase a $500,000 property, you should generate at least $20,000 annually after expenses. And his number is a little more aggressive than some other folks. Some people say, oh, you only need to make about, you know, a 1% or 2% in profits. But people who are a little savvier and experienced with real estate investing say, this day and age, you want to get closer to 4 or 5% if you can.
And then you can do all the planning you want, but there will always be surprises that come up along the way, right?
Right. So Scott Trench at Bigger Pockets said, among the contingencies landlords should plan for are unexpected vacancies and the cost of property management. So have at least 1 month's rent saved in an emergency fund to help cover vacancies. And if you're assuming less than $250 per month for repairs and maintenance, you're in for some nasty surprises, Scott said. And also he pointed out that these expenses don't always occur every month. They catch up with investors in big lump sums periodically over the years. And so that's all the more reason to keep a nice emergency fund to cover your property if needs be. You also want to speak with other landlords to get an estimate of tenant turnover, those market rents, and the typical maintenance costs in your area. You also want to check with home insurance brokers to estimate the cost of the policy you need. And don't account for things like property taxes. You can really get schooled on property taxes. Those are going up in a lot of jurisdictions. Lawn maintenance, utilities, the possibility of tenants who don't pay their rent. All these things need to be factored into your estimates. And so be pretty generous when you're estimating your costs, because it's better to overestimate your costs than underestimate them.
Did any of the experts you spoke with give tips for how to, you know, just be a good landlord for renters?
Communicate and be proactive in your communication. If your renter is texting you and asking you questions, don't leave them hanging for a couple weeks or months at a time, especially if they're in an emergency situation, there's a leak or something else that needs to be addressed right away. When you hear tenants complaining, it's often these absentee landlords that leave them in a lurch when they have an emergency situation. Oh, make sure you're following all the laws, of course. You know, for example, in Seattle, there's a new law that you need to give your tenants 180 days notice if you're going to raise the rent. That used to be 60 days in Seattle, but now it's more than that. So comply with the law. Make sure you're doing things by the book, because if you don't, as a landlord, in the long term, you can get in a lot of trouble for breaking some of these laws.
All right, that's Wall Street Journal personal finance reporter Veronica Dagger. Veronica, thanks for taking the time to chat.
Thanks so much, JR.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm JR Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome to Free Expression, a new podcast from the Wall Street Journal with me, Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of the Wall Street Journal. It's a podcast in which we're going to be trying to do something a little different, dig a little deeper into the issues behind the headlines that are in the news all the time. So please join me for my new podcast, Free Expression, with Jerry Baker of the Wall Street Journal. We're very much looking forward to really having some fascinating conversations, and I very much hope you'll join us.